Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Dane Grunewald, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. Today, we're celebrating an exciting milestone, our 100th episode. Joining Dane is Kurt Landon, Chief Customer Officer at Leader, who takes on the hosting duties for this special episode. Together, they reflect on the insights gleaned from past guests and discuss the evolution of leadership and team dynamics facilitated by the podcast. In this landmark episode, listeners will gain insights on, first, the show method. The discussion unveils the show methodology, an acronym Dane developed to help leaders effectively guide their teams, emphasizing strategy, health, outside influence, and work. Second, leadership adaptability. The adaptability of leadership models in today's environment is examined, focusing on how the show method offers flexibility in integrating with and enhancing other leadership frameworks. Finally, revisiting strategy. The episode delves into how often leaders should revisit their strategies to ensure they remain relevant and responsive to real-world feedback and changing conditions. If you're a leader who wants the keys to creating a direct, effective style of leadership, be sure to download our free resource, Leadership Unlocked, at thefutureofteamwork.com/leadership-unlocked. You can also find the link to download Leadership Unlocked in the show notes for this episode. Be sure to listen to the entire episode to discover who the winner of the giveaway is as we celebrate our 100th episode. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Grunewald, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group. And today I'm joined by Kurt Landon, the Chief Customer Officer at Leader, my good friend and colleague. And Kurt's going to be flipping the microphone again and taking the host seat as this is the 100th episode. So welcome, Kurt, and thanks for jumping in the host seat.
Thanks, Dane. And I feel like we should start with a congratulations to you on the 100th episode. It's really exciting. And you've met with lots of great people and we've learned so much. So big congratulations today to you.
Thanks, Kurt. Yeah, it's been a team effort. Alicia's done a huge amount of work behind the scenes from the inception. And we've also had quite a few other people play a part in that journey from production and marketing. So it's been great. And naturally, couldn't have 100 episodes without 100 guests, and you were one of them. So thanks for your participation too.
Absolutely. And as we go through our conversation today, I know that you'll be drawing from some of the wisdom that we've gathered from all these great guests over this period of time. And I think let's start, if we can, with talking a little bit about the show method from a leadership perspective. And would you maybe share for those listening a little bit of an overview of the show method so people who maybe are less familiar with it can get up to speed a little bit with that?
Yeah, you bet. I think from the very outset of the podcast, talking to different guests, I was always looking for common themes that help drive great teamwork. And over time, it became clear that there are a number of themes and everyone's got their own nomenclature. But what was very apparent is that the leader's role in driving great teamwork is extremely important. Teams can't be effective without a leader leading them. And what I started to realize is that as you looked at some of these themes, I had a few of them written down here around gratitude, storytelling, around behaviors, around resilience, around inclusivity, around psychological safety. They're all words that are great, but they're hard to enact as a leader, right? So we started just testing with different guests and with different team members internally and trying to find words that would allow a leader to almost build a dashboard. And that dashboard allows that leader to go in and say, well, how am I showing up in these three or four categories? So it was three categories for the longest of time. At one stage, it was around fresh ideas. It was around shared leadership, and it was around clarity. And so I was working that for a number of months. And then more recently, it just popped and we came up with show. I always like acronyms because they make it easier for you to remember too. And we are living in somewhat of a show me, don't tell me world. So I think leaders' behaviors have never been more on stage and under scrutiny and under inspection from teams as what we've seen in the last few years. So the show methodology is very much that. The S stands for strategy, which can also be story, depending on how teams and how leaders approach strategy. We'll talk to that later. H for health, which is both personal as well as team health. O for outside influence, and W for work. And it is important as leaders that we're doing the right work with the teams in the right manner. So when you look at that show methodology, it gives us all something to be checking in on, like how we're performing now and where might those adjustments be. It's not a fundamental transformation in how we show up. It is that dashboard approach to incremental improvement.
So Dan, when you contrast the show method with some of the other leadership models that you've seen out there, heard about, been exposed to, where do you feel like some of the traditional leadership models maybe fall short in today's environment?
I don't think any model falls short. I think the problem with every model is that they become too prescriptive. Mm-hmm. You have to go very deep in all of these different leadership models. So I think I've always been someone who values something that's simple and clear to be able to share with my teams and with my team members and with my shareholders, even as a leader myself. And so I think this creates a bit of room for adjustment, and it allows you to adopt principles and practices from other leadership models within this. So I don't see it as a competitor. I see it as more of an overlay to say, hey, pick your path, pick your leadership model, know your style, know your team, but just make sure that you're scoring well on each of these four dimensions.
That makes good sense. And I think some of these leadership models can get a little jargony. And So words matter, especially making sure they're legible. When we think of strategy, in the word strategy, it's pretty prolific these days. Some would say overused, but I think demystifying it, there's value there still in meaning to that word. So I'm curious, even though I think I know the answer, how you feel about this, how would you define strategy? What does it mean to you in the context of leadership?
Yeah, it's a great question, Kurt. And it's probably the one that I found of the four hardest to name, because strategy isn't well-defined. And to some people, strategy is a very well-documented plan and how we're going to go about doing it. To other people, it's more directional. To other people, it's very aspirational. And the reality is, I think story is something that resonates more with me. Mm-hmm. But we couldn't pick story because the more we delved into it, there are elements of this that needs to tie back to where a business is going, where a team's going, because that's the reason that we created the team in the first place. So I'm looking at it as in my opinion, in my read, it's a story about where the business intends to go. And that's probably the more clear definition. So a few things there. I believe that good strategies are built collectively, and you need to drive a lot of inclusivity, a lot of collaboration to do that. I think it's important to set out some clear objectives that are measurable so that the team, as we get behind that story or strategy, can know where we're at, can know what their roles are, and always communicating the why. We talk about that with so many of our guests. So if they know why we're going in this direction and we want to measure these types of outcomes, it's very easy for them to then know how they can leverage their strengths to be part of that effort. And then we can have more regular reviews, because no one can successfully set out a strategy and expect to go and hit that over 3 or 5 or 10 years without some adjustments along the way. So that's really where we've framed a lot of that effort and that lens of inquiry, appreciative inquiry with the team.
That's great. I know we get asked this question all the time. How often should you revisit your strategy? You made it reference a couple minutes ago to the idea of adjustments along the way. Do you see this as sort of small tweaks along the way? You set your strategy and then you let it sit for years and years, or are these adjustments in some cases larger based on what's going on in the external environment and the market and the economy? How do you think about that?
Yeah, it's interesting. We had Carl Cox on the show from 4D Strategy as a guest, and We since actually engaged him with one of our businesses, PTS Advance, and I've really enjoyed learning his approach. He builds a 10-year strategy with the team. He then breaks it down into 3-year harbors that you go through on your way to the 10-year destination. And then he'll break that down even further into a 1-year strategic pillars and pathways. And I think that still feels right, that 1-3-10-year outlook. But what I've experienced using his method of review and measurement is that the team is going to make course corrections and adjustments on those smaller elements of the strategy within the course of the year. So, you know, definitely meeting quarterly. And in some cases, particularly if there's a large change effort attached, you're going to be getting feedback from customers, feedback from team members, feedback from vendors. And you may see even biweekly or monthly that there are small adjustments being made. So it is a continuum. I don't think that you have vast swings in the destination or direction that you want to go, but the how you choose to get there is something that is very fluid. And I think in great teams, embracing that fluidity, learning, adapting, I think that increases resilience and it probably ties in very well to team health, which we'll talk about later.
I love that. So part of what I just heard you say is the destination maybe isn't necessarily changing or changing frequently, but there are adjustments along the way. I love this idea of fluidity. That makes a lot of sense. One thought that's running through my mind right now is I know there are a lot of leaders out there, probably some of our listeners, who don't consider themselves to be strategic per se. They're not into strategy setting. They're more into execution. So for our listeners who maybe don't see themselves as being natural strategists, any advice for them on how to dip their toe in the water and start to build that strategic sort of mindset and acumen?
It's funny. I had a lunch meeting with a friend here in Brisbane, Australia, not so long ago, and we were talking about strategy and the fact that it can be scary, just like innovation and disruption and all these other big business jargony words. But the reality is, going back to the story about where the business is going, you can do it really simply. You can just start with a picture or a few bullet points that say, right now we're here, I would like us to go here, and this is why. And what that looks like is we're going to open in 3 new markets, or we're going to expand the team from 12 to 50 people in the next 5 years. Like, start with what's meaningful to you. If you're clear on what you want as a leader, whether you're the CEO or whether you're a manager of a department, it doesn't matter. If you're leading teams to do work over time, like, create a story that excites you, and then go and share it with other people. Hey, I feel strongly about this. What do you see here that you like? What do you see here that I might be missing? What would you like to see here personally if you were in my seat? They're great questions just to get started. And ideas grow the more you share them. So if you think of strategy not as the traditional big thick deck that you've gone and done a huge amount of market research around, and more about a story for where you're trying to take a team and give a team some context and purpose around why it matters that they're doing the work that they do, I think it's far more accessible.
And thank you for mentioning story again, because I think that sort of disarms this big daunting concept of strategy and being strategic. And so that's even really helpful for me to think about this concept of thinking of it as a story about direction and destination. So I love that. Maybe let's pivot and talk about another dimension of this show model, health, and something you and I talk about a lot, and really health from a comprehensive perspective, both physical health and mental health and other aspects of health. Maybe share for us a little bit about why this is also important in the context of leadership and organizations, maybe why this is something that you're passionate about too, because it seems to me, as I'm looking out there in the world, that organizations are just talking so much about this concept of health of the organization, of individuals. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, for me, it's a mix of everything that we've heard from great guests around health, as well as personal experience of fatigue and burnout, stress, and all of those other things as a leader and of leaders that I've supported in my career, both as a vendor and as a team leader. The reality is, if you think about teams and teamwork, teams come together to achieve what individuals cannot achieve alone. So by the very definition, teamwork is going to be hard. If we could all just go out and do our own tasks and land it perfectly, we wouldn't need teams and teamwork. So teamwork becomes hard, and individuals are going to be taking on lots of stress at different times. There's a lot of variables, whether it's from strategy to task identification and alignment and review and adjustment. There's a lot of stuff going on. And that's not just at work, it's going on at home too. So we're living in this world now where I think most employees, most team members, likely suffering from a lot of anxiety and complexity every day from when they wake up to when they go to bed. And therefore, it's really important for us as leaders, if we're intending to build resilient, inclusive, collaborative teams that are going to make great impact over time, it's important that we lead off and set a very good example for managing our own health, for managing our own stress. But then once we're doing that personally, we extend that belief system and the resources required to our team members individually. And then we talk about how we do that collectively, because once you're healthier in as an individual, you're likely to become less triggered and be more open to helping your teammates as you collaborate and doing the work.
I love that. Just to break it down to brass tacks for some of our listeners, when you think of healthy teams, which is something we talk a lot about that's really tied into some of the work we do with our customers, maybe describe a little bit more about a healthy team versus an unhealthy team. What does that mean to you? How should people think about that?
Yeah, we've had some great guests come on and talk about healthy teams. John Estefanis at Rally Bright's one for sure. We had Michael McCarroll come on and talk about team Rodery and the way that they build epiphany effect in teams. I would break it down into three really key elements myself. One, that the team is clear about why they're doing the work that they're doing. Two, that the team is clear on what work each individual does. And then three, once each individual is clear on their own work, they need to be clear on how they can support others to do their individual work too. Mm-hmm. And then that creates, as part of the work, that importance of cooperation. And if you're getting that cooperation, if you're all aligned on why you're doing the work and how you're supporting each other, I think those things like psychological safety play out. I think those things like gratitude, we spoke to Chris Chambrow on the show about gratitude. Gratitude plays out because you don't have people in this very busy work environment, heads down, just getting their tasks done. They've got their heads up. They're looking out to support a team member who may be coming in on a bit of a rough back of a rough weekend, who may have run into an unforeseen problem with data or a tool or a vendor, and they're helping each other. So that gratitude starts to go around and build. And then going back to epiphany effect, which Michael McCarroll talked a lot about with us on the show, as that team starts overcoming problems, unforeseen problems in particular, not the ones they planned for together, then they're going to build those stronger bonds. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a great team. And that's a team that over time is going to find its way through and navigate whatever might pop up opportunities or challenges.
One of the things that jumps out at me as I heard you say that is just the plain language you're using. Again, I think some of this stuff gets so jargony. And for years in this space, we've been talking about team effectiveness and role clarity in the context of team effectiveness. The way you just talked about it is really refreshing because you're saying people need to understand what their colleagues, what each member of the team is doing, right? Which makes it a little bit more real. I think when there's this abstract term out there, role clarity, it's like this alien thing that's out there, but it's hard to pick apart and understand and work with. So I think aside from just the sort of refreshing nature of not so much jargon, it also makes it easier to really work with when you just break it down at more of a human level and say, okay, we're not talking about this abstract thing called role clarity, but you got to understand what each other are doing on the team in order for the team to be healthy, right?
Yeah, I love that call out too, Kurt, because role clarity traditionally has been what are the two or three things you're accountable for and what's your role description and title? And actually, it doesn't talk to the how, like the how do you do the work? Yeah. And we we so often don't know the how. And we're living in this world now where everyone's starting to talk about a shift to skills-based hiring. And it's just like, well, how do you know what skills people are using? Because who's actually stopping and talking to people in the team to understand the way that they like to do their work? There's a great book that I've been reading lately that shares if you define the how for people, then that can actually be very restrictive in teams and be very unhealthy. So you need to define like where you go, tasks, this task needs to be done, but give them some room, some autonomy, some creativity to determine their how, and then let them share their how and reward them, not for the outcome, but reward them for the how that they showed up to do the work. Because you can learn so much from that, and you then get to celebrate the beauty and the capability of each individual for what they are rather than for just a task or a role in the business.
I love that. That is really meaningful to me. I think if you, just playing back what I heard you say, if you're too controlling and prescriptive and one-dimensional or one note in the how, I think that could really limit both the ability to realize that strategy and direction, but also you might end up with better approaches. You know, some of the hows may be more interesting and compelling, more effective, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's a big edge for innovation and human connection and appreciation too.
That's great. Let's talk a little bit about outside influence, which is another relevant topic here. How do you see outside influence playing a role in being relevant to the concept of effective leadership?
I would say where I would start on that is that I was fortunate in life growing up. My dad had an executive role in the mining industry, so I got to just observe as a child like what he was doing and what was happening in the industry. So I've always been very curious, and I then continued to stay curious around different industries, my clients, projects and industries. And I got to a point in my career where I was looking for something more formal than just my own sort of self-led curiosity, and went to look at things like leadership development programs at a Harvard or an Oxford. But I found a group called Vistage. And so I joined a Vistage group, which is an executive group of about 12 to 15 CEOs and presidents. And they meet once a month, and they have an outside speaker come in once a month. And then they'll do some executive issue processing sessions. On top of all of that, the chair of the group acts as an advisor or a mentor for you. And that was a game changer for me. I started that process in, would have been May of 2016. And it just opened up my eyes to, oh, I'm not the only one having this problem. They're having that problem too. Oh, how did they solve it that might inform my ways of solving it? How could I help another individual to share my experience? And it just really opened my eyes up to, number one, some affirmation around what I was already doing well. Number two, some realization around what I was not doing so well and needed to dive into. And then three, probably some activation around, hey, I'm excited to learn more about this or to do more of this type of work, because so often as leaders, we're just heads down doing the job. And so it's nice to come away for a half day or a day a month and just have a bit of time to think about yourself, think about your team. So that's really where I've personally experienced it. And if I think about some of the guests that have come onto the show, we've seen quite a number of people. Jenny Wood's probably one of my favorite with the Own Your Career program at Google, where she was asking people or supporting people to go out and secure a mentor or an advisor or a relationship with, you know, a boss's boss. And she was really starting to get people to step up and look for where they could go rather than where they're going day to day.
That's great. What's running through my mind right now when I heard you talking about Vistage is you mentioned about helping others as well process through and work through some of their issues. I'm curious, yeah. Have you found when you do that, when you're helping others work through and process through their issues, whether it be people like me on your own team or people in your Vistage group, et cetera, do you learn from that too? It's great for that to be altruistic, but in these busy times, do you find that that's also beneficial back to you in terms of maybe bringing that outside influence back into the work that we're doing here?
I think that's a brilliant observation, and it's absolutely the truth. When you're helping someone else, often you can see something in them that you're maybe not willing to look at within yourself. It's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable as a leader to say, gee, I do a terrible job on giving feedback. And then you're coaching someone or supporting someone to give feedback to a team member that they're having trouble with. And you're like, you can almost hold that mirror to yourself and say, am I living through the advice that I'm giving? And more often than not, there's a gap. It's not always a big gap, but that more often than not, there's a gap because we all know a lot more than we execute on a daily basis. So I think that's a great perspective.
I think that's a really brilliant insight too. We should just tell each other we have these brilliant insights back and forth all day. But I really like that. So as you're giving that advice and guidance, kind of holding the mirror up to yourself, right?
Yeah.
And then that causes you to reflect. I think that's really insightful. You mentioned the word work a couple of minutes ago as you're answering that question. And maybe let's talk about work for a second, because there's a lot of work to be done in all there organizations. And we love the term teamwork, and work is part of that as well. So maybe share with our listeners a little bit about what work means to you in the context of the show method. Where does it fit in?
Yeah, it's definitely not sitting in board meetings, looking at Excel reports, project managing. It's none of those things. Mm-hmm. It's actually getting in with the team and picking some elements of work, whether it's with the customer, whether it's on a manufacturing line, whether it's going in and adjusting a whole approach to hiring or promoting people. It doesn't really matter where you pick your work, but get in and do some work more at the ground level with the team. And we've had a number of guests that talk to it. We had Colin Hunter come on and talk about building these experimental playgrounds. We had Luke Williams come on and talk about disruption and the ability to help work with your teams to explore better recipes. Hey, we've got all of these things. How could we reconstitute them to have a better outcome? Lisa Hill, our own colleague, we were talking about DEIB and the importance of bringing in diverse perspectives, creating more inclusivity in teams as you're going through change efforts. I think they're all the places where a leader should be showing up to do work in an appropriate balance, because it's meaningful. I think the team and customers, if you're involving customers or vendors even, they get to see you in there living it with them. You all get to learn. A leader gets to learn some perspectives of what's happening and what people's how is in the way that they get their work done. And the individuals also get to learn directly from the leader's perspectives and what they're prioritizing and placing value on. So I think it's extremely healthy. And let's be honest, as humans, we all take a great deal of satisfaction from performing work well. So even leaders deserve to have some work that they can say, hey, I jumped in with the team and we solved this problem and gee, it felt good. Mm-hmm. We got some good feedback from that.
It occurs to me as you're talking about that I wonder whether in the most recent years where micromanaging has become this bad set of words, whether people have conflated micromanaging with getting your hands dirty and working with the team or working with the customer. And if so, I think that's really problematic, right? Because there is a difference between the two. There's nothing dirty or wrong with getting in there with your teams and your customers. To your point, it's fulfilling for yourself. But I think that in most organizations, assuming the leader is effective, people want to work with their leaders and to work together. And so I am a bit concerned that I think in recent years that's become this perceived as this thing that shouldn't be, and maybe organizations have left something on the table, right?
Micromanagement's a really tricky one, because people don't like to be, going back to how people do work, people don't like to be told how to do work. They don't mind being told these tasks need to be done in this time frame, or you have this budget to do these tasks. But if you go down to a team member, unless they're brand new in the organization, and you say, I need you to do these tasks in this way, and it needs to look like that, then a leader's micromanaging, and that is dangerous. And so I think it's a good watch out, Kurt, that if a leader goes in to do some work with the team, that they're not going in to kind of say, here's how you do it, guys, let's get it done. They're going in with a curious mindset, and they're saying, How are we doing it today? How might we do it differently? Has anyone got any ideas that are out there that we could take from? Maybe even go back upstream into some of that outside influence. Have any of you guys seen things from your peer group or from past employment experiences that would inform us to approach this task differently? And I think that curiosity and creating some wider scope for within which people can have some agency and some autonomy would hopefully mitigate any of the micromanagement or other tensions and flare-ups that may occur if a leader all of a sudden jumps down onto the floor with the team and starts rolling up their sleeves without a good structure.
It's something that you do really well that I learned from you, which I think would be helpful for our listeners to think about is, you know, sometimes you'll say if there's a really complex task or something that we're working on, you'll say, hey, let's just get in a room together and have a jam session, a working session, and figure this out together, which I love so many aspects of that because one, it you know, you and I recently were talking about the idea of work can be fun. It should be fun, right? And so that's really fun. And also, I think it creates more of a professionally intimate experience. It's not, hey, I'm the leader, go do this task and get it done. It's let's figure it out together. And I think most people react really well to that. And that's work too, having that jam session, that working session. That can be really hard work, but it's probably a lot more fun when you're doing it together, right?
Way more fun. And actually, that reminds me of, we had Craig Weber on the show to talk about conversational capacity. And he talks about teams finding this sweet spot where people can actually come in and they can be courageous and candid about what they're seeing that can be done differently, but they can also be curious. So I love those jam sessions for that reason. In fact, I probably overuse that jam session and don't then move out into the, well, what actions are we taking away and who's got them? Because I have so much fun doing them. So again, as a leader, when you decide to jump into that work, probably my own reflection is that you don't only want to be the person who's coming in throwing out all the ideas, particularly if you're a more aspirational visionary leader. You want to be coming in and saying, well, where are the ideas? And now how do we move them into practice? And how do we learn from those behaviors? So if you can do both of those things, it's going to be lots of fun and high impact.
Yeah, that pull through at the end is really key. And I think tying that back to understanding what each team member is doing when we were talking about, you know, role clarity and now just understanding what everyone's responsibilities are, that I think is relevant to what we're talking about right now. So you have this great jam session and you're in the work together, highly collaborative, lots of diverse thinking. Okay, great. Now, how do we land the plane? Who's doing what? And then what are those accountabilities? That pull through is key so that you're not just having some great dialogue, right?
Yeah, yeah. In fact, this conversation has now helped me realize how I can sharpen my work with the team. So this is proving.
As long as you don't take away the jam sessions, I love this.
No, the jam sessions will be there.
No model or leadership model is perfect. And with this show model and method, I should say, what are some potential challenges, pitfalls, watchouts, guardrails, things that our listeners might want to be aware of if they like what they hear and want to work with this?
Well, I mean, the reality is that this method is not something new or breathtaking. It's a compilation of what is already happening in most teams and in most leaders' lives with some sort of sharpening of focus. So it's not going to fundamentally change anyone's daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly leadership impact or team effectiveness just by going in and saying, well, here it is, we're going to make these changes and let's go. It's a continuous process of, hey, over the next year, 2 years, 5 years, let's just keep checking in with where we're at on this methodology and how we score ourselves. And I think if you do that, there's a way to make this somewhat more accessible for the whole team. So my belief is, and I think where I've been fortunate in my career is, if you start to share your philosophies, and this framework is as much philosophy as practice, with the team, and if you create the common language, then you can hold each other accountable for, well, where are we at on strategy? How clear is it? When did we last check in? Is anyone seeing something new that we need to bring back up and better document or better scrutinize. And then the same on health. So like this summer, I've taken an extended period back in Australia because the first half of the year was hard. And I realized, hey, I'm not really living my values. And if I'm really stressed and strained and running too hot at times, I need to take a bit of time back and reflect and do a bit more study and make sure I come back sharp. So I think just every now and again, having the conversation with your teammates, having a bit of an assessment of your own performance, maybe you give yourself a score out of 10 on each one and monitor quarter over quarter how that looks. I think those types of approaches are what is going to allow you to get value from a framework like this. So I'd say that's where I'm at on this methodology right now. It's definitely a way to start moving in the right direction and then sustain that movement.
And every time we have a conversation like this, there's always sort of like a gift with purchase that I get out of it. And what's striking me right now is when you were talking about and sharing, thank you for sharing about your own reflection about, my words now, standing outside your values and then getting back in alignment with that and going and spending time with family and friends and your own family in Australia. And I know it's not directly what we're here to talk about, but I think it's a really timely point. We are doing a lot of work with our customers in the coaching realm, and values is something that's coming up so much now. I think, you know, as the world's getting so complicated, a lot of people are finding a lack of clarity in their own values and then at times a lack of alignment with those values. Any other thoughts on that, just briefly, that you might like to share?
I mean, that's very real and it's hard. My wife, Claire, will often say, how can you be the guy that talks to people about teamwork every week and then come home to us and you're not living some of those same values with us because you're tired or stressed or whatever it might be? I think the reality is that we can all hold values dearly, but to live them every day it takes work. And that ties back into that health dimension very heavily. We had David Corey on the show the other day to talk about emotional intelligence. And of his five criteria for driving emotional intelligence was like self-perception, self-expression, relationships. But the last one was stress management. So I think what you're likely seeing in the coaching practice, what a lot of our listeners are probably seeing across their organizations, is people can have values written on the wall. People can celebrate who's demonstrating good behavior in line with values. But it's really critical that we're actually taking the time to realize that most of us are living in stress states right now, whether it's work, whether it's politics, whether it's home life. There's all sorts of reasons. And we need to just keep doing these daily check-ins, weekly check-ins internally with ourselves, but also with our close team members to say, hey, where could I show up a little bit better in living that value this week or this month?
Right. And you and I have talked before about this idea of dials versus switches, right? It's not just a yes or no. And so standing inside your values is a term I use a lot because your values are there and it's not all or nothing. But on a scale of 1 to 10 on a volume dial, are you 10 out of 10 standing inside your values, 8 out of 10 at a given moment in time? It's so dynamic, again, because things are so complex. And I'm sure there are probably a few people who could say, I stand 100%, 10 out of 10 inside my values all the time. With every single one of my values, it's probably not realistic.
No, you're right. And that actually reminds me, I've been doing a lot of work this year with coaches, and also my wife and I got the Daily Stoic journal that Ryan Holiday put out. And it shows you go back to some of the great philosophers, and it's a daily practice. They were daily questioning themselves on, am I being just? Who am I leaving behind today? And there's questions that we need to be asking ourselves every day from lots of different perspectives. And they're questions that in a team environment, you can actually activate much more comprehensively, because as leaders, it's always easier to say the problem's over there with that process or that person or that customer, rather than doing the hard work of looking in that mirror and saying, well, I own this one. the problem here is that I haven't been clear enough, or I haven't created enough time, or I haven't brought the team around this soon enough to tackle it and to truly live our values. So if people take nothing other than that away from this show methodology, mm-hmm. I think you've called out a really important point. Like, as leaders, how can we use this methodology to check in on how we're living in our values?
Thank you. I always feel like we could talk for hours and hours and hours, but I know we don't have all the time in the world. So maybe just one or two last questions for you. Whenever we have these conversations, I always think one of the things that you're so great at is that future focus, that future orientation, and topics like leadership and strategy or storytelling and teams and healthy teams. These are such dynamic topics. They're changing, kind of the ground's moving under our feet, so to speak. When you, Dane, look out in the years ahead, what are you predicting, forecasting from a trends perspective? And I hate that word because it sounds gimmicky, but maybe, let's say, new energy on some of these topics. Where do you think things are headed on these topics going forward?
I'm really excited. I know we talked earlier in the year about the disappearance of noise on intergenerational tensions. We talked a lot about the shift from formal learning to more casual learning. I still see those as big sort of accelerators for all teams. But the more I listen to guests, the more I talk to customers, I would say what I'm most energized by, and I'll tie this back to another guest, Andre Martin, that came in and spoke to us about creating energy in teams rather than draining energy. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited about that. I think that teams where leaders can jump in and do this good work and empower their teams to have a little bit more agency and autonomy on how they're living their values, how they're doing their work, I think those teams are going to see fundamental acceleration in a vertical direction in terms of performances, in terms of innovation, in terms of health. And that's exciting. I don't see that any team, no matter what size of organization, is going to be restricted from accessing that. It's just going to be the discipline of putting the right systems and language and rhythm in place. And I'm not sitting here thinking that we're going to see a huge shift to the gig economy or anything that's fundamentally different that unlocks this. I think it's going to be unlocked in intact teams today. And maybe those teams will go through a little bit of change in personnel because change is not always comfortable for everyone. So that's going to be natural. But we don't need some technology or some huge shift in employment framework to unlock that potential. So that's where my energy is. Everyone who's out there leading teams, participating on teams, having the opportunity to lift that discretionary effort, that creative output in the work that they do.
I love that you use the word agency, because I think obviously there's this macro level energy and trend out there in the world for customized experiences and people choosing their own adventure. And I think bringing that into the realm of teamwork so that people can really have agency, as you said, in what their experience is like in the team environment. How do we want this team to be, in my opinion or your opinion, so that it's really meaningful and fulfilling and fun, as we talked about,
and fun.
That's really important, right?
100%, 100%. And that's what we'll likely move into in the next stage. I do have another acronym coming up. So it's Show Up and Scale. So the show's the first part we've talked about today. Up is unlock potential, and scale is going to be around shared clarity, aspirations, because aspirations of individuals is really important. We talked to Esther Zeladon and Ernesto Ciroli about that, and then leadership, and then finally enterprise or exploration. I'm still defining that last E, but I think we're going to be able to take this show method for leaders and then build out a deeper systems approach to how they're letting their teams drive forward in the work that they do. So I'm excited to be doing a lot more of that work with you, with our guests, and with some of the customers that we're lucky to be working with.
Excellent. I love these conversations. I always walk away with my brain a little bit bigger. So thank you so much. Congratulations again. 100 episodes, that is significant, especially when you look at the incredible caliber of some of the guests you've had on the show. So congratulations, and thanks for this really energetic discussion.
Thanks, Kurt. It's been a blast. It's great having you in the host seat again.
Thank you.
Thank you to everyone who participated in our giveaway to celebrate the 100th episode of the Future of Teamwork podcast. Your ratings and reviews mean a lot to us and are important for the growth of our podcast. We're excited to announce the winner of the 3-month coaching session with Dane. Congratulations to Caitlin Landis. Your thoughtful review stood out, and we're eager to see how Dane's expertise will develop your teamwork skills further. For everyone interested in deepening their understanding of effective leadership and the show method, be sure to visit our website at thefutureofteamwork.com. Here you can access more resources and learn more about the concepts we discuss on the podcast. Thanks again for your support, and a big congratulations to Caitlin. Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,